Hey, what's up? It's DJ Flip Phone, and welcome back to Be Loud Radio. Last month, Be Loud DJs met with Lauren LaRose and Mariana Barry Boyd, two experts working to share and promote how social media affects teenagers. DJ Bird and Diggity Doo sat down with them and asked important questions on how we can build a more balanced and informed relationship with technology. But we also wanted to give youth an opportunity to share their own perspective. Be Loud DJs recorded insights into their digital lives, exploring the highs and lows of social media engagement. So tune in and listen to our next segment on social media and what the digital world means to Be Loud teens.
Hi, this is DJ Luce, and I'm here with Dr. LaRose, a child psychiatrist, and I'm going to ask her what the correct age is for a kid to get a phone at. Okay, so right off the bat, what age would you say is appropriate from, like, your studies and stuff?
Okay, so what I have found in research is that there's a difference between what would be, you know, the ideal age for a kid to get some kind of phone or communication device, and what's the best age for a kid to get a smartphone. Okay, so what we find is that the smartphone is going to have a bigger impact on physical health and mental health, and the effects are going to be the strongest up until about the age of 15. So we would ideally like to see kids wait until 15 to get a smartphone, but a lot of people younger than that need some way to communicate, and so there's a lot of other options to do that, like flip phones or smartwatches.
What are the things that will affect a kid the most off of a smartphone?
Okay, so part of it is just the screen time in general, because you can carry it in your hand. We find that people end up using screens for many more hours per day when they have a smartphone, okay, just because of it's so accessible. The other part of it is, like, what they're doing on the phone, okay? So, you know, we know that social media in particular is going to have the biggest impact on mental health for young people.
How can somebody prevent having so much time on a smartphone if you have a smartphone?
That's a great question. So, I mean, there are things on smartphones like screen time warnings, okay, that you can set up so that the phone's going to alert you when you go over that time. The key is that you actually have to pay attention to the alert and not ignore it and just keep going, right? That's part of it. I think another thing is just being really mindful of when you're using the phone. Like, are you using it when you're bored? Are you using it when you're having certain strong emotions? Are you using it to decompress, like after a long day at school? And then where you're using the phone. Like, are you using it in the car? Are you using it in your room at night before you go to bed? If you can be really mindful of those things and kind of set limits for yourself, like, I'm not going to use the phone in the car, or I'm not going to use the phone in my room, that can really help to limit screen time.
Okay, I have one more question. How can a person use social media smart? Like, how can somebody have social media and use it to the point where it doesn't drive them or make them addicted?
Okay. One thing I will say about that is that our research has shown, like, if you are using social media with the intent of connecting with other people, you actually end up having higher rates of loneliness. Okay, which is kind of confusing. So when you are using social media because you like watching videos of, you know, cooking, and it's like helping you learn to cook, or you're watching videos about organization because you need some ideas for how to organize your room, okay? When you're using social media with, like, a really specific purpose, and it's not necessarily just to connect with people, that's a smarter way to use it. So when we're just looking at pictures just to see, you know, how old is that person's kids now? That's a little bit different. It's more like if you're getting onto social media to make friends or to communicate with your friends instead of communicating with them in person, that's what makes you at higher risk for loneliness.
Does texting have the same effect?
No, it does not. Nope. So texting does not carry that same risk. It's really just with social media.
Why? Because like Instagram DMs and texting are kind of the same thing, right?
Yeah, it's really interesting how that tiny little difference of where you are communicating can have such a big impact on mental health. And it's something we still don't completely understand. We just are able to see and research these trends, and this is with, you know, tens of thousands of people. So we're able to say, like, this correlation is there. We don't exactly know why. We're still trying to figure it out, but we do know that the correlation is there.
So texting is very different from DMs. And I've heard that, like, calling and FaceTiming, that's so much better than texting, right?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so when you think about it, when you're texting someone, you're really missing a lot of the communication. Okay, you're missing like the tone of the person's voice. You're missing, especially compared to face-to-face contact or FaceTime, like you're missing facial expressions, you're missing body language, okay? So a lot can be misinterpreted over text, okay? And sometimes that's like an unconscious process. It's something we're not even aware of, okay? And you might notice this, like sometimes you read a text and you can't tell, is this person happy, sad, angry, frustrated? I can't tell from this text. But when you're actually talking to someone face-to-face, it's much easier to read how they're feeling, okay? So there is definitely a big difference between text and phone calls versus FaceTime, yeah.
Yeah, as an overthinker, I get that a lot. I'm like, are they mad at me? Are they tired? Are they happy? Like, what is going on with this person's text? Okay, what are some places that it would be good to use a phone?
I think probably the question I could answer better would be, where are some places that it might not be a great idea to use a phone? Okay. So we do know in the research that one of the places that people use phones that it can have the most negative effect is in their bedroom at night. Okay. So that's where we see people struggle the most with sleep problems, but also depression and suicidal thoughts. Okay. We see that those come at the highest rates when people are using their phone in their bedrooms at night. So I usually tell parents and young people that if they take anything away from what I'm saying, is to try to not use the phone in their room at night.
By night, how late do you mean? Like 6 or 8 or 10?
So I'm really talking about bedtime, basically. When you go to your room to get ready for bed. In medicine, we're considering bedtime to be about an hour before you go to sleep.
So a person shouldn't use any type of devices, smartphones, computers, iPads, TV, 1 hour before they lay down for sleep.
That's the ideal. The reason why that is, what we have found is that, you know, there are certain lights in screens that actually affect the release of like chemicals in your brain at night. So when your brain is exposed to that light, it gets confused and it basically thinks it's daytime and that you should be awake. So you end up having more broken sleep or like less restful sleep at night.
Because of the phone and not having it, I have been experiencing some loneliness. And I know you said like it happens with the phone, but I've experienced it happening without the phone. Like, all my friends over Mardi Gras break, they got in contact, they texted each other, and they hung out. And I was left out of that because I didn't have a phone. They didn't mean to leave me out, but they did because you have to text my mom to get to me, and they kind of forgot about that. and they tried to get in contact with me, but it was hard because I wasn't available.
Yeah, so this is a huge problem that we're seeing all across the board, okay? And you're definitely not the only one that I've heard have that experience. This is really hard for kids to grapple with, and it's really hard for parents to grapple with that, you know, parents who really are firm about their beliefs in smartphones and want to wait also have to balance that with not wanting their kids to be excluded. And that's a really hard thing. I think it's really hard for your age group right now because people have been getting smartphones at younger and younger ages. I think over time that's going to change, you know, with people who have younger kids, they're starting to rethink this. So I'm hoping that one day that that risk of like being excluded is not going to be there as much. But that, I mean, it's a really tough problem for young people now. And I feel for you on that. I don't know the answer to that, unfortunately.
Do you have any last words to my parents?
I think that your parents are really just, at the end of the day, they're just trying to protect you, okay, because they love you. And I know it's hard as a kid to not be able to do things that you see other people your age being able to do. So I do respect your parents' decision, I have to say, even though I know for them it's probably a really hard decision. I also think, going back to what I said earlier, that, you know, if this is something you really want, I think the thing is you just have to show them that you've done your own research and that you're ready for the responsibility.
Well, thank you, Dr. LaRose. Is there anything else that you'd like to say?
My point is always that, you know, smartphones are not evil. Social media is not inherently evil. What's really important is how we use it. What is our relationship with it? That's the most important thing.
This is DJ Bricky D, and I'm going to be sharing my opinion on social media. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the podcast. One day, my cousins and I were using our phones and iPads, and then my auntie comes in, and she's like, "Children are always playing on video games nowadays." And I didn't really agree with that because there's more to it than just games. I edit, make videos, draw, write stories, and more all on my iPad. And I think that it's unfair that people think it's nonsense. The funniest thing about this was that she was also on her phone, and she usually just scrolls through TikTok. This was DJ Bricky D tuning out. I hope you have a wonderful day. Bye.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Splash, and today I'm talking about social media's flaws and positives. The goods on social media is it lets kids express themselves and less stress off their shoulders. Also, social media entertains kids and helps them connect people across the internet. But the flaws of social media is social media companies can take your data and keep it and eventually sell it, putting all your information out on the internet, giving you a digital footprint. Also, another flaw to social media is if you're on social media too much, you can get sucked in and start to have health problems like weight gain, depression, anxiety. But overall, social media has a lot of good, and the good outweighs the bad. So in my opinion, social media is right for kids. Thanks for listening, and what's your view on social media?
Hey there, this is DJ Frying Pan, and today's podcast might get a little controversial. I don't think that kids should have phones. Okay, before you start throwing your tomatoes already, just give me a second to explain. Every time I open YouTube Shorts, I see about a million little kids on my For You page. And every time I see a little kid on YouTube Shorts or Pinterest, I think, who gave this little kid access to social media? Because there are some legitimate 5-year-olds on these apps. And it's not just that they're annoying, which sometimes they are, but what I'm trying to say is that the algorithm is built to keep you scrolling and keep you hooked, to keep you even addicted to your phone. And especially in the youth community, it's so easy to get sucked in, but it's so hard to stop scrolling and do something else. There's kids all over the internet. Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, YouTube, everywhere. And I also think the format of the phone and how portable it is makes it even harder to stop once you're dug into this never-ending loop. It's so easy to just slide into your pocket and take out whenever you want. So when you should be at a park, playing, walking around, enjoying life, your hand immediately reaches into your pocket to find your phone. I guess what I'm trying to say is that, parents, if you're thinking about getting your kid a screen, I suggest getting them an iPad and make sure that you're controlling their screen time so that they don't just have free range to sit on their screen all day and not do anything productive. And I'm not saying that you can't be productive on a screen, but just sitting and scrolling all day can affect your attention span and a lot of other mental health things. Just make sure that your kids are getting a healthy amount of outside time and non-screen time. This has been DJ Frying Pan. Thank you for listening to my podcast. Bye-bye.
Hey guys, it's DJ TC, and today I'm going to feed in my opinion about kids having phones and or social media. To start, I personally think adults should know that taking away their child's phone doesn't always lead them into the right direction and sometimes encourages them to do the wrong thing instead of the right. No, phones are not necessities in a child's life, but it's not odd or uncommon to feel left out when you see kids your age having things that you don't. Having phones at a young age isn't the best thing either. This can be shown when kids, preteens, and teens see someone else doing something, so they follow along. Whether it is right or wrong, this isn't the best solution when you feel left out. Hey, this is DJ TC on Be Loud Radio, signing off.
This is DJ 5050 from Be Loud Radio. I am here to talk about what I think parents should know about social media. I think that most parents should really know that social media, people on it, most of them are not negative. Lots of people there are positive. Most people are able to support your ideas. One instance I have seen this in is that one day I decided to hop on the game, hop on my Xbox, play a little bit of Overwatch, you know what I'm saying? And I had voice chat on, so I was able to talk to people who was on my team. While playing, I came across this one small-time streamer. He was very supportive. He really helped out new players, and he led our team to victory. He was actually very, very, very positive. He was kind. He was easygoing. He didn't yell or scream at the team if we made a mishap or anything like that. And he was all around just a good guy. After the match, he wished me good luck and went on to our next one. I'm really happy that there's people out there that are able to support and be happy online, because most places in social media are just cruel, mean. And I'll hope to see you in the next one. Peace.
I sat down with Mariana and talked about the business behind social media. Listen up. Mariana, when you say people make money from watching social media, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so what I mean when I say that companies make money off of social media and people looking at social media is that there's other companies that pay a lot of money to these social media apps to put ads on them. So just like ads we see on TV or on billboards, there's ads on social media. And they're very, very effective, meaning that a lot of people see the ads. And so because they're so effective, the social media companies are able to charge more money for them. So some of these ads cost thousands of dollars all the way up to millions of dollars. And that's the main way that social media companies make money.
Cool. Next question is, do businesses on social media want you to get addicted?
That's a great question. What they want most of all is to make sure that you spend as much time as possible on social media. So in some way, that can create addictions. And they're not necessarily saying we want people addicted, but they're sort of getting around that by saying we want people to spend a lot of time on there. So it depends on the individual about what a sort of level gets them to be addicted. But basically, they make the most money by people spending the most time on their apps, and that's their ultimate goal, is to make money.
Okay. Last question. How do you prevent addiction?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. And I think, you know, when we talked, you gave some great ideas for how you can do that. So having a good idea about how much time you want to spend per day or per week on social media and setting those time limits. And talking, you know, if you're a kid, also talking to your parents about that. They may have a good idea about, like, you should only spend, you know, like 2 hours on your phone per week. And so you set a timer, and then when the timer is done, then you go and you figure out something else to do. And one sort of trick that I like is that if I know I have to finish something a certain time, I can't, you know, be on my phone after a certain time, I like to make a plan, like, what am I going to do right after this? And it can be something that gets you moving, like you suggested. So decide, okay, I'm going to finish playing my game. And then when the timer goes off, I'm going to go for a walk. And I think that having that healthy balance of what you know, you set the time limit for yourself, you stick to it, and then you figure something else out to do. And that's going to help prevent you getting sort of sucked in and constantly scrolling on social media.
Thank you, Mariana. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next time on Be Loud Radio. Bye.